வஸ்வ தத்ஸவிதுர்வரேண்யம் பர்கோ தேவஸ்ய தீமஹி தியோ யோ ந ப்ரசோதயாத். ஓம். மே வி மெடிடேட் ஆன் தட் சுப்ரீம் பீயிங் who dwells in the hearts of all. He is the source and sustenance of this universe. In Him we live, move, and have our being. May He illumine our hearts, and may He guide us in every way. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Peace. We have been studying Viveka Chudamuni, or the crest jewel of discrimination, by the great seer philosopher Shankara. He calls this the crest jewel of discrimination because discrimination is a fundamental discipline that we have to practice in order to reach the ultimate truth. And this discrimination means not the discrimination between right and wrong, between good and evil. That is important, yes. But the discrimination that is taught here is to discriminate between that which is eternal and which is non-eternal. In other words, the ideal and goal of life is to reach that ultimate reality which is eternal. Reality means that which is eternal, that which is abiding. Now again, that reality is not anywhere outside of yourself that you'll have to go and reach that. But that reality is within every one of us. And whoever has attained any spiritual experience realizes that it is all within. You see, Christ taught kingdom of heaven is within. And my master often pointed out, he who has it here, that is within himself, finds it everywhere. He who does not have it within himself cannot find him anywhere. Now again, this very truth has been brought out in this treatise as well as in the Upanishads by what is known as Mahavakya, the supreme word. And what is that supreme word? Identity between the Atman, the Self, and Brahman, what you call God. And as I have often explained to you, that there are four supreme words in the Upanishads, and they all mean the same thing. For instance, one is that thou art, or I am Brahman. This Atman is Brahman. Pure consciousness that is within us is Brahman. And if you study any religion, and wherever you find that supreme truth attained, you see that identity, that unity. I and my Father are one. or this kingdom of heaven is within. The Sufis, Sufi mystics also realize that same truth. I am He. Now, it is a matter of experience again. What is this I am? Or what is God? This identity between I and Brahman, or between thou and that. What is that thou and what is that? What is that that? So, only the realization and experience can give us that truth. But before we can experience that truth, there are three stages or three processes or three steps, I'd say. First is, you have to hear about this truth. You have to learn it. Learn about this truth, hear about this truth from the scriptures as well as from an illumined teacher. So, you hear, I am Brahman, or that thou art. Now, the next process is, you must reason upon this truth. You see, if you simply hear this truth and go away, then you don't understand, you don't experience, you don't realize, you have misunderstood the whole thing. For instance, in order to prove that, we have a very interesting story in the Upanishads. You see, two students, the king of the demons and the king of the gods, came to learn of this truth of Brahman from a very well-known teacher. And they lived in the ashrama of the teacher for some years. And then suddenly the teacher looked at them and said, "Say, why you are here? What for?" And they said, we have learned that you know that truth. We have come to learn from you." Then he taught them that thou art. And then he told them, "Go and look at the lake and look at yourselves and come and tell me what you have understood." So they came and said, "Yes, now I know who I am and what I am. I looked at myself and nails and hair, everything I could see reflected on the lake, and that's what I am." In other words, they identified themselves with the body. And then the teacher said, "Well, reason upon it." But the king of the demons thought that he had understood the truth. So he went back and told his followers that this body is Brahman. And so they began to take care of the body, decorate the body, polish the body. That was their worship. But the king of the gods, he was not satisfied. He began to discriminate. "What good is this truth? This body has birth, has death, disease, subject to disease, subject to old age. I see no good in this teaching." So he comes back. And then he tells him that think of the self in dream. So he began to analyze. And then he comes back and says, I see no good in this truth. The dreaming self also is subject to happiness and misery, is subject to change. Then the teacher said, all right, go back and sleep, a sound sleep. Then he comes back and says, yes, I became unconscious. But what good is that truth? I don't know anything while I am unconscious. Then he told him the truth. You have to go beyond all these. You have to transcend the waking, dreaming and deep sleep to reach that truth. Now, so discrimination is the sword, as it were, by which we cut the knot of ignorance. And so reason upon that truth. And so here we are coming to that process of reasoning. Next, merely reason will not do. Then when you understand what this Atman, that is identical with Brahman, what that is intellectually in a sense, then you meditate upon that truth. And through meditation only, you experience, you realize how you are Brahman and that you are not anymore identifying yourself with the sheaths, physical, mental, intellectual. You see, all these are sheaths. And for instance, why I say that you have to experience this truth. You can analyze, you can reason out, and can understand that you are not the body. But in all our actions and behaviors, we are identifying ourselves with the body. Now I'll tell you, there was one teacher here I met, and he learned the truth about, you know, what he calls Zen. I'm that. That is already accomplished. So what else to do? Then I said, true, but if I pinch you, your body, that you would shudder. So what good is that knowledge? See, you are still identifying yourself with body. So you have to go through spiritual disciplines when you can rise above all this consciousness. For instance, the mind is subject to moods, and you are identifying yourselves with those moods. What good is that? Your true nature, if that is one with Brahman, true nature is something that is immortal, abiding, eternal. And what is immortal? What does immortality mean? With immortality, there is a blissful consciousness. So, Sat, that means immortal life. Chit, pure consciousness, and Ananda, blissful consciousness. So you have to realize that. Now here, what we are going to read now, Shankara brings out how there are five sheaths. This sheath that is called physical covering. You see, they are called sheaths. And the Atman is encased in these five sheaths. And we have to transcend, as it were, these five sheaths, or pierce through these five sheaths and find the Atman. So one siddhi is this physical covering, this body. And he reasons out how this body cannot be the Atman. Then there is the sheath or covering of what we call prana, the vital energy, breathing, life principle. Then the sheath, what he calls manas, mind. You see, we make a distinction between mind and intellect and ego. These are three functions of what we call antakkarana. Mind, according to our psychology, is that which takes the impressions through the senses, which gathers the impressions. Now that is one sheath. Then again, intellect is that, as it gathers the senses, with the help of the senses, as it gathers that sensation, the intellect discriminates and tells us what this object is. For instance, when I see this book, then intellect says it's a book, not the desk. Analyzes, distinguishes. And then the ego is, there is the sense, I know this object. This happens immediately, you know, simultaneously it's happening. So the covering of the mind, the covering of the intellect, the covering of the ego. And then we have to transcend these coverings. We have to realize through reason that these are coverings. These are sheaths, not the Atman. And then what remains, that we have to meditate upon. You see, in the Upanishads it calls the process of not this, not that. You see, what am I? Am I this body? Not this. Am I the mind? Not this. Am I the intellect? Not this. Am I the ego? Not this. Then what remains? That is the Atman. And so there you are taught to meditate. And when you become absorbed, and then you transcend, you see, this waking state, dreaming state, dreamless sleep state, and then beyond, the fourth, you reach that when you have eliminated yourself from all these coverings and sheaths. For instance, when we are awake, we are, as it were, identifying with all these five coverings. When we are dreaming, then the body is not there. Covering of body is not in the consciousness. When we are in deep sleep, the mind, covering of the mind and intellect also is not there. And when we are in deep sleep, that covering in the Upanishads as well as here is called sheath of bliss. That's a very interesting word. Anandamaya kosha. The covering of bliss. Because then our consciousness, that is we, the individual, is very near to Atman or Brahman. There is just one covering, one layer of covering. And that is why, again, it points out psychologically, that when you have deep sleep, you are nearer to Brahman, nearer to God, and you find a wonderful rest. But that is not, again, any experience of Atman or Brahman. You know, in this connection, let me point out, there was one Austrian author, Kassler is his name, I think, if I am correct. You know, I have very bad memory for names. But anyway, this Austrian wrote a book. He went to India and met all kinds of wrong people, rather. And then he says that the Hindus identify deep sleep with samadhi because that's what they call blissful. And in the Upanishads you find that how the deep sleep is described, and next is described samadhi, which is beyond that deep sleep. But he did not go as far as that. But anyway, so these are the coverings, and what we are going to read is pointing out these coverings are not the Atman because they are so ephemeral. They are not eternal. They are not that infinite bliss or infinite wisdom. Now let me read out to you. You know, I don't have to explain much, only I'll read out to you this, that you can follow. This body is a physical covering. Food made its birth possible. On food it lives, without food it must die. It consists of cuticles, skin, flesh, blood, bone and water. It cannot be the Atman, the ever pure, the self-existent. It did not exist before birth. It will not exist after death. It exists for a short while only, in the interim between them. Its very nature is transient and subject to change. It's a compound, not an element. Its vitality is only a reflection. You see that there is vitality or life in the body. What, from where does it derive that life? From the Atma. You feel in the body. What is the source of that? The Atma. It is a sense object which can be perceived like a jar. How can it be the Atman, the experiencer of all experiences? You see, Atman is the experiencer of all experiences. And body is something that we are experiencing like a sense object, like a jar, like this desk. You know, sometimes one may experience that your body is lying and you are separate from the body. The body consists of arms, legs and other limbs. It is not the Atman, for when some of these limbs have been cut off, a man may continue to live and function through his remaining organs. The body is controlled by another, as I am controlling it. It cannot be the Atman, the controller. The Atman watches the body with its various characteristics, actions and states of growth. That this Atman, which is the abiding reality, is of another nature than the body, must be self-evident. The body is a bundle of bones held together by flesh. It's very dirty and full of filth. The body can never be the same as the self-existent Atman, the Knower. The nature of the Atman is quite different from that of the body. It is the ignorant man who identifies himself with the body, which is compounded of skin, flesh, fat, bone and filth. The man of spiritual discrimination knows the Atman, his true being, the one supreme reality, as distinct from the body. The fool thinks I am the body. The intelligent man thinks I am an individual soul united with the body. But this is not again the supreme truth. But the wise man, in the greatness of his knowledge and spiritual discrimination, sees the Atman as reality and thinks I am Brahman. So there is this difference between the intellectual man. He considers himself an individual man. Individual soul, and I have this body. But the wise, he thinks himself, not only he thinks, he has realized that the Atman, I, am the eternal reality, one with Brahman. O fool, stop identifying yourself with this lump of skin, flesh, fat, bones and filth. Identify yourself with Brahman, the Absolute. You see, that's the process of meditation. Identify yourself with Brahman. I am he, I am that. But do not, through ignorance, say this body is that or the mind, but beyond all that. And also, identify yourself with Brahman, the Absolute, the Atman in all beings. You see, I am one, I am that Atman, one with Brahman and one with all beings. And one with the whole universe. I am in the stars, I am in the sun, I am in the moon, I am everywhere. I pervade everywhere. The intelligent man, O fool, stop identifying yourself with this lump of skin, flesh, fat, bones. That is how you can attain the supreme peace. The intelligent man may be learned in Vedanta and the moral laws, but there is not the least hope of his liberation until he stops mistakenly identifying himself with the body and the sense organs. This identification is called by delusion. Now here you know what he means to say. Is this, that this identification is something that you have to experience when you actually know you are separate from the body. You see, the body consciousness goes away. And after you have attained samadhi, then as you come back, of course you have the body consciousness. You are subject to hunger also. But any moment, such a person can detach himself from the body. You never identify yourself with the shadow cast by your body, or with its reflection, or with the body you see in a dream or in your imagination. Therefore, you should not identify yourself with this living body either. Those who live in ignorance identify the body with the Atman. This ignorance is the root cause of birth, death and rebirth. Therefore, you must strive earnestly to destroy it. When your heart is free from this ignorance, there will be no longer be any possibility of your rebirth. You will reach immortality. You see, here again that same ideal is brought forth. How? Until you reach that truth, you will have to be born again and again. You see, we don't have any such thing that, oh, you are a sinner and you will suffer. No such thing. But that is your true being. God is within you. You are that reality. And until you attain that, you are given opportunities again and again. You go through birth, death, rebirth, until you attain this knowledge. And when you attain this knowledge, then you are free from rebirth. That covering of the Atman, which is called the vital covering, you see, this is another covering again, is made up of the vital force and the five organs of action. The body is called the physical covering. It comes to life when it is enveloped by the vital covering. It is thus that the body engages in action. The vital covering is not the Atman, for it is merely composed of the vital airs. Air-like, it enters and leaves the body. It does not know what is good or bad for itself or for others. It is always dependent upon the Atman. Thus he proceeds to point out to us how it is not the mind, not the intellect, not the ego, but it is beyond. Now here is a question.
The oral questions from the audience are being revoiced due to their being off mic during the original recording.
If the self, Atman, is the light of consciousness, and if ignorance is not something that can be predicated of the Atman, who or what experiences ignorance? It would seem that consciousness somehow performs a dual robe and is therefore split. Now let me think. Who or what experiences ignorance? That is the question really. In other words, you see, you don't experience ignorance. That's not a very good, happy expression. Nobody experiences ignorance, but one is ignorant. You see? So the question comes to this. Whose is this ignorance? You can put this question that way. I think that's what you mean most probably. Whose is this ignorance? Now that is a question again, which is answered by this great seer philosopher Shankara by saying, it may seem rather, you may feel it's insulting. He says, one who asks a question, whose is this ignorance? Who is asking this question? But you see, you may seem this is avoiding the whole issue, but no. It has a deeper meaning. For instance, if you are really, as you are in ignorance, this question does not arise. Ignorance is ignorance. But one who is just beginning to wake up, he asks the question, whose is this ignorance? And so really, the spiritual aspirant only realizes that he is in ignorance, not others. And when you become a spiritual aspirant, when you realize you are in ignorance, then is it that you inquire.
But Swami, the word ignore means to not pay any attention to something. So if you're in ignorance spiritually, it would mean that you were not paying attention to spiritual things at all.
No.
You are paying attention to physical things.
Right. So what?
Well, so you cannot be in ignorance. You can only be in ignorance about something.
You are in ignorance about everything in this universe. Until you wake up and realize that everything is Brahman, until then you are in full of ignorance. You see, that's the point I'm telling you, that you do not realize that you are in complete ignorance. You only realize occasionally, I am ignorant about what is the what makes this substance. You see, you point out this ignorance or that ignorance. But I point out you are fully, completely in ignorance about everything in the universe. Until you wake up and realize that God alone is reality. So as that awareness comes, that I am in ignorance, this is not true. What I experience, what I see, what I consider myself to be, this cannot be true. Because this is all so ephemeral, so transitory. So what is the truth? What is the reality? I must find that. That which is abiding, that which is eternal. You see, that is the beginning of awakening. How can a struggling devotee best help loved ones who are going through painful inner conflict and do not seem to be able to accept a spiritual path of any kind for their liberation. And that's a problem, you know. How can a blind person lead another blind person? True, our heart goes out for others. But first open your eyes, then only you can be of real service to others. But does that mean that we can't do anything for anybody? Yes, we can. A struggling spiritual devotee can help. And how can that help be given? Prayer. Pray. Prayer is a great help. And pray this way, that may true understanding come to all. May the peace of God come to all. That is the only way. And after all, you know, the real help comes only through prayer. I don't know of any other way. You may try to correct a person, it doesn't help. Unless he wishes to be corrected. And then also, if the past karmas and tendencies are so strong, that it is not possible for certain individuals to think of spiritual life. And so, well, they have to wait. But pray for everybody. Pray for those whom you love and whom you want to help. Pray. That is it. That is a great means to help others. Now I have only these questions now come from the floor.
Swami, prayer is the way to get rid of attachments as well.
Yes.
How do you pray to get rid of attachments?
Ah, very good question. And the simple prayer is, give me devotion. You see, attachment can go for lesser things when you become attached to a better thing, to a greater thing. You see, attachment, non-attachment or detachment is not something negative. You have to get something better before you can give up something that is good. And so, God is the highest, the supreme. And if you can be if you can have your mind attached to God, then all lesser attachments fall away from you. And so pray, I want devotion, God. I want only to love you. Help me to love you. Well, ask.
What is true humility?
True humility? That's very interesting also. Let me see. I have to think about it. True humility is to be completely egoless. That's how I define. Humility is to be egoless. Now, there are two ways. One is to identify yourself with Brahman. Atman is Brahman. I am he. I am that. And another way is to surrender your ego to God. Two extreme illustrations we find amongst the disciples of Sri Ramakrishna. Swami Vivekananda, you know, this is G.C. Ghosh, another disciple put it this way, that Swami Vivekananda, he identified himself with Brahman. Whenever he would speak of I, it was always the impersonal, the universal self. And so G.C. Ghosh puts it this way. Maya tried to bind him. Maya, what is Maya? Ego. Tried to bind him, but he grew so big that there was not enough rope for Maya to bind him. And there was another disciple of Ramakrishna, Nag Mahashaya. You see, he would see God in every being, and he would always walk even with folded palms and see God in every being. And so this G.C. Ghosh said that Nag Mahashaya, Maya wanted to bind him also. But he became small and small and small, so small that no knot can be put. So that's true humility. Now ask something more.
Swami, if we start to discriminate and get rid of the physical sheath and the mental sheath and the ego, isn't there a danger that we might find ourselves meditating on nothing?
You're right. That's very difficult. You know, that is the path of Jnana Yoga. It becomes very difficult. But here is the point again. As mix Jnana Yoga and Bhakti along with that, then you see you are not in that one. You see, you have a chosen ideal. And that chosen ideal, consider the chosen ideal as Brahman and as your Atman, your true self. And naturally he is within, you see. So make your mind God-centric in every way. You see, as long as we have this physical consciousness, we are dualists. Non-dualism is a matter of experience. You know, that reminds me of a great devotee of Rama, Hanuman, you know. He was asked by Rama, how do you look upon me? And he said, when I have the physical consciousness, thou art the master, I am thy servant. When I consider myself as an individual soul, thou art the whole, I am thy part. When I consider myself as the spirit, Atman, I am one with thee. You see, no contradiction. Dualism, qualified monism, and non-dualism. So non-dualism is a matter of experience. And that is the supreme truth. Now, I heard this fact from my master. He said one day they were all seated together. Swamiji was present and they were all together, all these disciples. And Swami Vivekananda was certainly in a mood. And he said, "Look, look, Brahman, Brahman, everywhere, everywhere, Brahman." And my master said that Swamiji said that in such a way, and he infused such spirit into it, that all of them were lifted up into that consciousness. You see, but the fact is, they were all Brahmagyanis, they were all knowers of Brahman.
Om Hari Om Om Sahana Bhavatu Sahanau Bhunaktu Sahavirjam Karavavahai Tejasena Bodhitamastu Mavidvishavahai Om. May Brahman protect us, may He guide us, may He give us strength and right understanding. May we have love for all. May our study bring light unto us. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. Peace, peace.